Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, which theoretically would be the 30th day of Shvat, but we're going to group it in the Rosh Chodesh Adar Tshuvot, especially because that's the way the Meshivim date it. So this is going to be a Tshuva of the Nodab Yehudas. So this is from Shut Nodab Yehuda Mahadura Tanyana, meaning the second volume, basically, and the Kunches Achron Simon Kufyud Bet. It's from Prague, the first day of Rosh Chodesh, Adar, from Tuf Kuf Mem from 1780, and he's writing his student Eliezer Fleckless, who has his own Tshuvot as well, but he's writing to him. And he says that Erev Shabbos, this past Erev Shabbos, as we were heading into Shabbos, your father, David Fleckless, had given me a letter from you, and then and now I'm responding to the letter. So here's what happened. The letter says, in the Kehillah where this Rabbi Eliezer Fleckless is living, most Shabbatot, what happens is, let's pause and talk about carrying on Shabbat. One is not allowed to carry on Shabbat in a public place. Definition of a public place is a complicated issue. There are a lot of places that we think of as probably as public today that halakhically don't quite qualify as public. There's all sorts of questions about it. So, deal right, you can't carry in a public place. And Rabbanan, you also can't carry in a public place. You can't carry even in those other kinds of places. But in those rabbinic kinds of places, so one of the ways you can fix it is, depending on what it is, but you can fix it with what's called, you can fix a mavoi with either a tzuras hapetach, with a shape of a door, or maybe with a lechi, with a pole, or a korah, or a beam on top. There's all sorts of ways to do it. But in this town, they would do it that way in the Jewish streets. But it would very frequently happen that over the course of Shabbat would be knocked down, especially because the non-Jews would stop, would break into the string that was for the Torah HaPesach, Torah HaPetach, right? They're making the shape of a door. Trying to make the shape of a door, so the top of it, or what it would be, a string across, like we have today in Eruvim as well, and the non-Jews would break it for whatever reason. It's not clear in the Tshuva. But them breaking it then makes it a bittul of Oneg Shabbos, because they say the tikkun mavoi is gone. You can't fix up the mavoi like it has. I mean, this Tzuret HaPetach makes it like there's a wall there, and therefore you could carry there as if it's in a private place, a fully enclosed space, or a significantly enough enclosed space for Shabbat purposes. And he says, and it gets in the riddle of our Oneg Shabbos, because you can't bring food from house to house, which tells us that in 1780, part of what people did on Shabbos was they brought food to each other, as many people do today. So therefore, he's got a problem, and he wants to try to figure out what you do about this. And the reason why you got to figure out what to do about this is because he doesn't want people to have Oneg Shabbos, and the usual way is not working, right? The Mavoi way is not working. So he checks, and he finds out in this city, it's completely surrounded by, or it's almost completely surrounded by a chafira, which is like a big ditch, but it's really a big ditch. It's a ditch that's not really passable. We'll talk about it in a second. It's very deep. And wherever there's not this ditch or this, you know, surrounding moat or whatever it would be, there are homes, there are houses, and those houses don't leave any room in between them, halachically, or any room. There's probably some room between them, but enough that you don't have to think of it as a separation. But basically, it's all closed, is what he's saying. So since it's all closed, either by houses or by this ditch, he wants to know, maybe you can rely on that. Now, that's a whole set of questions of its own, because the houses aren't really made to be a wall for the city, but he's apparently assuming, and the notary is not going to disagree, that you can use that as a wall to surround the city. So, and this ditch, he says, never gets filled up, meaning if it's the kind of thing, let's say it was used as a garbage ditch. So if it's used as a garbage ditch, then if it gets filled up with garbage, it's not really a ditch, not really a hole, it's not really a space, right? The idea is that this space makes enough of interruption that the city can be thought of as a separate space from other places, and therefore can be thought of as a private space where you can carry. So the answer is, so he says, it doesn't get filled up by garbage. Not only doesn't get filled up by garbage, it doesn't get filled up when you have snow, right? So you get snowpack, that doesn't fill it. And even when the snow melts, so there's more water, that doesn't fill it either. Not only that, people don't use it, right? That's important for, if you're going to say it's space, it's going to let us think of this as a separate space, that it doesn't get used in that way. Not people don't walk through it. Like if people walk through it, then you'd say maybe it's not going to count as a mechitza, meaning he's trying to get this to count as a sort of a wall, meaning if it's 10 tefachim deep, then you can say that just like if I put a wall of 10 tefachim high, that would be a wall. So too, halachically, if I have if it's raised up from the full ground, if it's a mountain, if it's a hill kind of a thing, it's 10 tefachim raised up from the bottom, then it's okay. And that ditch would do that for us. So, but if people walk through it, then it's not a wall of any sort. right? So they don't use it at all. So he says, but when non-Jews want to traverse it every so often, they're going from the other side to here, so they push themselves, and it's not easy, it's not meant to be there, and it's not easy to do it, but there's this one path which to do it, and there you have this one path, and they go through that one path, but it's a very narrow path, and they come into the street of the Jews, and therefore that's his question. Can we use this ditch as a wall, especially since, here's the problem, this ditch seems to have been made bidei shemayim. It happened on its own, or it was sort of a natural. It wasn't like it was a dug ditch. It happened on its own. So the Maggid of Rum actually holds that a wall that's made bidei shemayim, if it's made by heaven, that doesn't count as a wall. There's room to think that doesn't count as a wall, and therefore it won't work. So that's a sheet of the Maggid of Rum that you'd have a problem with. So, for example, not that the Nadav Yehuda brings it up, but that would be a question. Let's say someone wants to say there's an area of all around Manhattan, the seawall. So the Maggid of Rum is saying walls that are made by heaven, by Hashem, that are just natural, those don't count as walls for these purposes. So that would be an issue. Because I'm not, it's not that they don't count a wall, I'm sorry. It's that if people walk through them, that's what the Maggid of Rum says. Lots of people walk through them, that's what Vatli Mechitza makes it into not a Mechitza. Okay, so that's what the question posed to the Rabbi Yehuda. So he answers to his, his beloved student, you might remember that I have an opinion about a lechi, how made me elav, that if you have a lechi that stands on, meaning one of the ways that you make a close for a mavoy, a close for an alleyway, as it is, as it were, is you put a post, and it's called the lechi, on the side of the wall, and that's symbolically a wall to close that side. So what if you have a lechi that happens on its own? So the Nota Behuda says that he, in Shir, you may remember, basically is what he's saying, you may remember that in Shir I suggested that it's no worse for Rabbanon than it would be for Behuda, meaning there's a debate in the Gemara about how many walls does an area need to be considered Rishud HaYachid. Rishud HaYachid is what we call private property, but in our English language, we think of private property as being that which is belongs to somebody. But halachically, a private space is a place that's enclosed. That's what makes it a private space, because other people can't get in. So the question is, how much of an enclosure does one need for it to be considered a private space? So Rabbi Yehuda held two mechitos at a Torah level, two walls at a Torah level, and I'm pretty sure they have to be in an L, but I can't fully remember now, but I think they might have had to be in an L rather than two parallel walls. That's enough of an, but I could be wrong about that, but that's enough of an enclosure for a Doraita. And then Rabbi Yehuda holds that if you have two walls Doraita and you make a third wall to worry about the Derabbanan issue, shuv lo atu rabim umivat lumechitza shlishit, then the fact that many people go through the third wall will not ruin it, because it's only a wall that was needed to Rabbanan. So since the Rabbanan needed the wall, they also didn't require that it be a wall that the Rabbanan don't go through. The way you'd explain this, not that the Rabbanan gets into it, but the way you'd explain this according to the Rabbanan would be that you need an enclosure. Since you need an enclosure, the Oraita enclosure was, two walls. Chazal came along and said, we want a third wall. But when they made that third wall, they were mekil. They were lenient about that third wall, in that even if people in some way walk through that wall, and the way that happens is because you have all sorts of halachic ways of making walls that don't actually constitute barriers. So people walk through that wall, it won't affect the wall. That's what Rabbi Yehuda said. That's clear. What Rabbi Yehuda said was, in Shir, was that he thinks that the same thing that's true for Rabbi Yehuda about his third wall should be true for Rabbanan about their fourth wall. Meaning there are many poskim who hold, there's a debate about this, but there are many poskim who hold that three walls is d'oraita, according to the Rabbanan, is good enough. I think the Rambam holds, my memory is the Rambam holds that you need three walls and something even at the Torah level, but I could be wrong about that. So the Nota says that even if, that according to those opinions, you need three walls at the d'oraita level, they would agree that the fourth wall, even if many people walk through it, will not be mevata l'machit. So why would they hold it's not about the Mechitza? For the same reason Rabbi Yehuda, since the fourth wall is only needed at the rabbinic level, therefore, in legislating the fourth wall, they also had the leniencies that even if Rabbim come along, even if many people come along and walk through it, it won't be mevatel for the purpose that we care about. Meaning you need this symbolic fourth wall, and that symbolic fourth wall won't be ruined by the fact that people walk through it. That was his suggestion. So if that's true, how does that help us here? Because, and then he says, even according to the post, well, you need four mechitzot at a Torah level. You need all four walls at a Torah level to be Rishud Yachid. But The truth is that you only have the rabbim, the people who are walking in this case, in one particular place. So that one particular place is not 10 amot wide. And in another halachic issue, if you have a break in a wall that's less than 10 amot, that's not considered a destruction of the wall. It's considered a pierce on the wall, a break in the wall. But some walls have breaks in them. Since some walls have breaks in them, so then it's perfectly fine. And therefore, he says he should be fine over here too, because it's just a small break in the wall. The truth is, the Magen Avraham elsewhere held that when it comes to a pirtza, when it comes to a break in a wall, we need that break to be under four tfachim. If it's a question of rabbim walk through it, if it's a question of the people walk through it, so if you need it to be four tfachim, so that's already narrower. So the Tzitzel says, I'm sorry, the Note of Yehuda says, that's only if you're a pirtza gimura. What's a pirtza gimura? That means if it's a real wall with a real break, but here it's not a real break in the wall, it's the rabbim were walking through it. So that's a chumra on its own. So that chumra, along with that chumra, you don't have to combine chumras in these situations. But if you want to make it even better, here's what you can do. You can fill that path with dirt, right? Fill the path. Everything else is never broken through. So that's really just a wall. It's a natural wall. But a natural wall, I corrected myself, is okay even according to the Magen Avraham, as long as rabbim, as long as the masses don't walk through it and therefore ruin it. So that you can leave. You've got this area, let's say it's more than four tfachim, but it's less than 10 amot, and we're maybe worried about the Magen Avraham's second chumrah, his second stringency, that you need, you can't have a pirtza of four tfachim. That's already a problem. So you want to fix that. So what you can do is you fill in the pathway with dirt, the whole pathway with dirt, and then you dig it out again. So now, when you dug it out, that part of it that you're digging out is a mechitza, because it goes the right amount. So we'll talk about that in a second, how steep it has to be. But it's a mechitza. It's a wall. It counts as a wall. And now it counts as a wall that people made. Once you have a wall that people made, so then the Magen Avraham's problem of a wall that people walk through is not a problem anymore, because the wall that people made, he never had that chumra about walls that people made. And therefore, you don't have a problem with that. So if that's true, then the whole city has no problems, because you have walls around it. It's true, many of the walls are not, much of the wall is not man-made, but the part of the wall that's not man-made doesn't have the rabbi walking through it. The part that is man-made, the part that has people walking through it, is man-made. The only other piece that he adds is that he has to be very careful that it be mitlakit asara mitoch arba, meaning in halacha, the Gemara already talks about the question of how steep an incline do you need in order for something to be counted as a wall. Meaning, if I have a sheer wall, if I build a wall, we build them straight up. If I'm going to, it's true in halacha that if you have a mound and the mound is 10 tefachim high, so if it was a sheer mound, you usually don't have mounds that are sheer, right? But if it was a sheer cliff, that would clearly count as a wall halachically, although as we said, not everyone would have this chumrah about people walking through it. So how, but on the other hand, nobody really thinks that if you have just a street that goes, it sort of rises gently and falls gently, not a hill like that, rises and falls, how much would that would all of a sudden be considered a wall? That's not true either. So what's the standard? Then the halacha is that it has to be mitlakit asara mitoch arba. Within four amot, it has to rise 10 tfachim. That's the deepness of it. I used to know what the percentage, what that incline counts as, but I don't know what it is. I think it might be like 41-42%, meaning because it's four amot is 24 tefachim, so it's rising 10 tefachim within 24, I think. Anyway, if you feel like reminding me of how I used to know a little bit of math, you can email me, grothst@gmail.com. But basically, it has to be mitlakit asara mitoch arba. That's true. You have to be very careful that this ditch that you're talking about, this big moat around the city, this whatever it is around the city that separates it from things around it, is steep enough that it would count as a wall halachically. And if it is, then it's good. Now, he says you don't really have to, and you'd also have to worry, although it's not likely, that maybe this was made, or it happened before the city came into being. And then you'd have a problem with it being hukof shelo ledira. And then you get to all sorts of other issues, but he doesn't think that's a real problem, so we won't get into that right now. So those are the central issues that this religious fleckless relate raised in this tshuva. Then there's a couple of other issues that he brings up just in the course of writing the letter, because I think of those that didn't write letters so often, and therefore he didn't. So he says, my son, Benia Charav Acharif, my bright and sharp son, Shmuel Segel, Bir Oto, Shemikedem, you know, Agim the Taltel Belushi Tukun. He points out in that city that Rabbi Elazar Flek was living in, he happens to know that there was a time when people carried without checking into this at all. Meaning, the question that Rabbi Elazar Flek asked the Noda Behuda started with the idea that they had built these mevo'ot, they had made these tzuras of Pesach to try to fix up the alleyways in the city that they could, the streets, the Jews' streets in the city that they could be carried there. But this son of this Shmuel Segel points out that in that city there was a time when they didn't worry about that. Now, if you asked me, I would have said, oh, that's because there was a time when they were less, you know, observant, less from, and now they're, you know, from where they knew better about halacha, so they did it. But he says, you know, they did it for a long time, they didn't have these things. It's just about 25 years ago that they started doing this, that they started every mavoi would have a tzuras haPesach in order you could carry there. So Reb Shmuel Segel suggested that maybe there was a time when the Sar HaIr, the nobleman who owns the city, basically, right? In those days, you had nobility. It wasn't democracy. You had a nobleman. You had a prince or a baron or whatever it was, and it was his city, basically. And maybe he agreed to sell the whole city or reshut over the city in terms of Eruvin issues to the Jews of the city, like today, when people in, you know, New York, or in a neighborhood in New York, will try to build an Eruv, they will also lease the city, you know, for $1 a year or whatever, or $1 for 99 years from the mayor. And halakhically, many people think that works. So here, too, maybe they did that. He agreed to give them the reshut. Once he gave them the reshut, the whole city belonged to them halakhically in some way. And then they could rely on the Hekef HaEmek. And on the heck of it, they could rely on the dish. And maybe that was always true. You know, maybe this is not a new heter that he's thinking of. It was an old heter that he was thinking of. But then, maybe about 25 years ago, the new government came to power, a new nobleman came to power. He didn't want to do this. Maybe, you know, you could easily imagine him saying, what, I'm going to give you the rights over my whole city. I'm not doing it. And that's when they started feeling they had to fix up the alleyways with Tzurat HaPetach. They had to fix up the streets with Tzurat HaPetach, with doorways, halachic doorways, for the purpose of being able to carry, at least in those Jews' streets. So this Shmuel Segel suggested, you know, if you could find an, again, you could check with the government, maybe now they're willing again to let you, you know, symbolically lease the whole city, and then you could do the whole thing, and then when you fix the Jews, you could still fix the mivot, you could fix the Tzurat HaPetach in the streets of the Jews, but you wouldn't have to worry about there being anything else involved. So that's another idea for how to fix it up. You could also lease it from the government, as we often do today. And then, if over the course of Shabbat, the Tzurat HaPetach breaks, we can say, Shabbat Huil V'Hutra Kul... Kulan, right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have read it inside, but that we could then say that even if they break, we could say, well, it doesn't matter because we've got the external walls that are helping us out. And the Shulchan Aruch passes in Shin Ayin Dalid, that if you have people with their own courtyards, and they make an Eruv in their own courtyard so that they can carry there, and then over Shabbat, something gets broken, right? Let's say they shared a wall. They can each carry within their own space, because we hold that once Shabbos was allowed, then it was allowed for the entire Shabbos. Hold Shabbos. Hutra, hutra. Right? So that's because the external wall still exists. In other words, you have a courtyard, two courtyards that share one wall, but around them there are these other walls that they also sort of share, right? So if the wall in between the two courtyards breaks, the problem you have is a rabbinic problem, the fact that the two courtyards were separate Rishuyot HaYachid before, and now they become sort of one big Rishuyot HaYachid. But since the external walls still exist, so the halacha is that if Shabbos started off being okay, and the external walls still exist, then you're allowed to carry the whole rest of Shabbos. So here too, if you fix the Tzurat HaPetach before Shabbat, and you have these external walls of this ditch, so then if things break over the course of Shabbat, you'll be okay, right? That's the fundamental solution. The fundamental solution is that if you have the external walls existing, then you don't have to worry as much about if the internal Tzurat HaPetach fall down. Now, it's not quite clear that works perfectly, because there's another principle that if we can expect in general that non-Jews are going to come and do something over the course of Shabbat. So there's a couple of cases of that. If you have a non-Jew who's going to move in over Shabbat, or so when Shabbat starts, he's not there and you make an Eruv, and then he comes to live where it's there. So a non-Jew in halacha is oser, prohibits us from being able to use an Eruv. Think of it as a one chatzer, fact is that today we get around that by leasing it, so that would help with that. But the Rebbe is not sure about all those kinds of things. If it's generally expected that the non-Jew might break the Torah Petach, as often happens, so then he's not sure whether you can be Matur or Yisur, but if you can buy it from you can buy the Reshut from the owner of the city, that will get rid of that problem, because then the non-Jews who are there are guests and they're not owners, and then it would be okay. So that's the end now of the main question. The end of the main question, which was, can you find a way to help people be able to carry on Shabbat in this city? It's a reminder also that already back then, this is, 200 years ago and more, that back then, the idea of living, when Jews lived in a place, they expected and wanted to live in a place where they could carry on Shabbat, so they could go from place to place, from people to people, and share meals, and share a good time, and all those kinds of things. That's one set of issues that comes up. Now, you have another issue that comes up, is you have a Sefer Torah that this is what the Rehi writes it is, Shekadvo Hamukzak L'Shabtai Tzvi. The person who wrote a Sefer Torah is known to be a Shabbatian, to be a believer in Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi lived 100 and something years beforehand, but there were still Shabbatians around. It's a reminder, and we don't always remember these things, but it's a reminder that some of these battles of Jewish history went on for long periods of time. Right? Karaites were around for centuries and a problem for Jews. It's not different. Now, I'm not saying they're the same in terms of their beliefs or their practices, but it's not all that much different from, let's say, Reform and Conservative Judaism. Reform Judaism has now been around for 100 and something years, and they have a view of Judaism that's very different from what I understand, that my teachers have taught me, is the view of Judaism. And then you get into all sorts of questions about how these people qualify and what their standing is for halakhic purposes. Shabbatianism wasn't that much different. It was a whole different movement. We're not going to get into it now, what it thought, what it didn't think, but it was still around. The truth is, I once, many years ago, read an article, I think by Professor Schneer Lyman, about the Notabi Yehuda and his refusal to get involved in the dispute between Rav Yaakov Emden and Rav Yonah Saibshitz. Rav Yaakov Emden and Rav Yonah Saibshitz were contemporaries and colleagues at a point, and Rav Yaakov Emden decided, based on whatever evidence there was, amulets that he found, that Rav Yonah Saibshitz, who is a tremendous Talmid Chacham and still quoted today on many halakhic issues, in many of his halakhic works, I think he's the author of Crazy You Place Anything on Shulchan Aruch. He's the author of important halakhic works that people still quote today. Rav Yaakov Emden decided that he was a secret Shabbatian. So it was the kind of a thing where you could be outwardly, completely, not just outwardly, maybe inwardly too, almost completely halachic in the ways that we would notice, and yet you had a belief, Shabbatians, let's say, believe that Shabtai Tzvi was the Mashiach, and then whatever went wrong, and he's going to come back. And it was very clear at the time, that's not so different than things that go on today, but that's a different topic, we're not going to get into it, but it's also not so different from Christianity, right? So it was clear that Shabbatians held a belief that was inimical to Jewish faith and Jewish belief. So the Notary Bute is being asked in 1780, Shabtai Tzvi, I think, is like in the 1650s. The Notary Bute is being asked in 1780 about a Shabbatian. I just looked it up. Shabtai Tzvi was born in 1626 and he died in 1676. But I think his heyday was before that in any case. I think it was 1666. He was imprisoned and then he eventually converts to Islam. So this is 120 years later, and yet there are people who are still Shabbatians around and they're writing Sifrei Torah. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, if when he wrote it, he was already suspected of being a Shabbatian, even though he didn't prove it yet, and then later it became proven, then you should begonez the Sefer Torah. You should bury the Sefer Torah. You should, meaning you can't use it. Because this kata aruras is the Nodbiyuda, this accursed group, amrinan hochiach b'safar tkilato, that at the end, ki ma'atesh ra'it mishinechshad bazeh, shiyena kilagami. He says, I don't see many people who are suspected of being Shabbatians who don't have some element of it to it. Now that I read this, it occurs to me that Professor Lyman may have referred to this note tshuva when he wrote the article, but because he might have said that this was an Odebut's way of sort of hinting it when he thought about it, but that he didn't want to get involved because Rav Yonah Saibshitz was such a great Torah scholar. But it's a remarkable thing to think about. The idea that it's at least plausible that a tremendous Torah scholar whose practice of Judaism, whose halakhic writings are still used today by people and they don't notice anything wrong with them, could nonetheless have a belief that removes them from Jewish faith such that their Sefer Torah that they write have to be buried. And I think people today whatever, whether we could apply today to any particular person or not, people today, I think, would deny that fundamental premise, that there could be such a thing as somebody who is so halakhically observant and so halakhically expert who could nonetheless count as a Sabbatian, and therefore their Sefer Torah would be invalid. So note of what you're saying. If they were suspected before they started writing it, then this Sefer Torah will be invalid because suspicion is almost definitely, and then later it turns out they're really Sabbatian. Suspicion is enough for us to say the likelihood is that there's something in there, because it's very rare, he says, that you have basically smoke without fire. You have people suspected who don't have something wrong with it. But, meaning, if he's not fully a Sabbatian, he's got some Sabbatian leanings. So again, I'm not telling you how to apply it to today, but Renodibut is now saying that even Sabbatian leanings would be good enough that their Sefer Torah should be considered invalid. So that gets us into all sorts of questions that people try to deny today, about the extent to which faith is necessary and indispensable when it comes to being considered a full Jew. The just practice is not nearly acceptable and good enough. So if you never figure it out, if you never prove it, so that would be one kind of a situation. Nobody is not willing to say there that you would definitely have to bury it, but if somebody who in the end we find out that they're certainly Sabbatian, then we have to bury their Sefer Torah. And then he says, it seems to me, sheyeh b'li machloket. So you should do it without a machloket if you can. You should find a way to do it without having a lot of debate about it. Pasuk says it's doim chokhmah. You know, those who are sort of humble, modest, you know, they'll have wisdom and they'll know how to do it. And then the last little piece is, he was asked about the fact there's a Masechet Sofrim. There's a Masechet Sofrim, what's called Masepto Ketanot. It's got laws about writing Sifrei Torah and other books like that. So there in Perek Tet Zion, it refers to 147 Mizmorim in Tehillim, 147 Psalms in the book of Tehillim, and it says, and it's the 147, Kineged, the 147 years of Yaakov. So the 147 years of Yaakov is fine. That happens. That's true. That's correct. We know that. But in our books of Tehillim, we have 150 Psalms, right? So he says, interesting thing, he says, you know, you're taking me chutz legidri, you're taking me out of my area, meaning I'm a halachic guy. She'ein darki b'divrei agadah. I don't know a lot about Agada. I don't know a lot about these kinds of non-halachic thought kinds of problems. It's an interesting thing for the Notary to say. But he says, even though I've come out, I happen to know that Chazal say in Yalkut Yili, meaning he knows some of this stuff. He's just saying it's not his métier, as it were. He knows these things, though. So in Yalkut Tehillim, Yeshua says, Yavo alayim nistakalti b'sefer Agada miyami pam achat. I never look at this stuff, but one time I looked and I learned and I read that there are 147 years of Tehillim, corresponding to 147 years of Yaakov, and then it says Vatakado shaped to Israel, as we say in Volitzia, right? You are Hashem, the Holy One who sits over the Tehillot of Israel, the praises of Israel. Then normally we think that the praises of Israel are the praises of the Jewish people, but this Medrash read it as the praises of Yisrael Sab, of grandfather Jacob. I will just pause to mention that I recently did I'm doing a series on TorahMusings.com as I'm taping this. By the time you read this, the series will already be complete. But you look up the one on the Rambam's idea about how we started saying Baruch Shem Kor Bachdol Yolam Va'ed. So the Rambam there refers to Yaakov as the Zakein, as the elder one. And there's sort of a feeling of Yaakov like being the grandfather of the entire Jewish people. And that comes up here as well. So in any case, so that shows that even I don't have to know a lot of Midrash to know it. It's right here that you have it, that 147 is not on Masechet. So from somewhere it's in a It's in like regular Midrashim that people know when because they read Midrash every so often. So isn't it more than that? So he says, well, different people count it in different ways. So for one example, there's a two-line Mizmor Tehillim that counts in our books of Tehillim, in Tehallel, I'm sorry. Halot Hashem Kol Goyim, Hashem Kol Goyim, Yivan Chasov, and Hashem Le'olam, Halleluka. In our books of Halleluka, it counts as a whole chapter. But he says that there is other sources that would say that it's not a chapter of its own because it's too small to be a chapter, and you just fold it into another chapter. So I already turned 150, and 149, he gives two other examples of that, and he says, so they had 147. So it's a reminder that the division of books of Tanakh wasn't always the exact same as it is now. They used to have 147 Mizmorim Tehillim, and they built ideas off of that. But we today have 150. So that is a tshuva of the Nodeh B'Yehudah for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, mostly about Eruvin issues, about the ability when you have a problem with your Tzur HaPetach, your doorways that are going to make your Eruv, about how you can use walls, even maybe walls that are made naturally, but you can use walls as long as those walls didn't get broken through, and how many walls you need, and how you fix those, and all those issues that we've seen. That was fundamentally what we spoke about. Then a little bit about the idea of a Sabbatian, and the fact that Sabbatians, for all they could be very frum, as we would call it today, and very observant, were not able to write valid Sifrei Torah, and their Sifrei Torah would have to have been buried. And then finally a little bit about the Mizmorim Tehillim, about how many psalms there are in the book of Tehillim. A responsible day for the 30th of Shvat, basically, but for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. Have a great day. Bye.